Culver City, Tuesday, August 24th, 12:15 p.m. They had lunch in a Mexican restaurant in Culver City. It was quiet. There were a handful of film editors in the corner from nearby Sony studios, a couple of high school kids necking, a group of older women in sun hats. They sat in a corner booth and both ordered the special. Evan said, "Balder seems to think the sea-level data is key."
"That's what Balder thinks. Frankly, I'm not so sure."
"Why is that?"
"Nobody's seen all the data. But even if it's high quality, it needs to show a substantial sea-level rise to impress a jury. It may not."
"How could it not?" Evan said. "With glaciers melting and breaking off Antarctica?"
"Even so, it may not," she said.
"You know the Maldive Islands in the Indian Ocean? They were concerned about flooding, so a team of Scandinavian researchers came in to study sea levels. The scientists found no rise in several centuries, and a fall in the last 20 years."
"A fall? Was that published?"
"Last year," she said. The food came. Jennifer gave a dismissive wave of her hand, enough shop talk for now. She ate her burrito with gusto, wiping her chin with the back of her hand. He saw a jagged white scar running from her palm down the underside of her forearm. She said,
"God, I love this food. You can't get decent Mexican food in D.C.
"Is that where you're from?" She nodded.
"I came out to help John."
"He asked you?"
"I couldn't turn him down."
She shrugged.
"So I see my boyfriend on alternate weekends. He comes out here, or I go back there. But if this trial goes forward, it will be a year, maybe 2 years. I don't think our relationship will make it."
"What does he do, your boyfriend?"
"Attorney."
Evans smiled. "Sometimes I think everyone's an attorney."
"Everyone is. He does securities law. Not my thing."
"What's your thing?"
"Witness prep and jury selection. Psychological analysis of the pool. That's why I'm in charge of the focus groups."
"I see."
"We know that most people we might put on the jury will have heard of global warming, and most will probably be inclined to think it is real."
"Jesus, I hope so," Evan said. "I mean, it's been an established fact for the last 15 years.
"But we need to determine what people will believe in the face of contrary evidence."
"Such as?"
"Such as the graphs I showed you today, or the satellite data. You know about the satellite data?"
Evan shook his head.
"The theory of global warming predicts that the upper atmosphere will warm from trapped heat, just like a greenhouse. The surface of the Earth warms later. But since 1979, we've had orbiting satellites that can continuously measure the atmosphere 5 miles up. They show that the upper atmosphere is warming much less than the ground is."
"Maybe there's a problem with the data."
"Trust me, the satellite data have been reanalyzed dozens of times," she said. "They're probably the most intensely scrutinized data in the world. But the data from weather balloons agrees with the satellites. They show much less warming than expected by the theory."
She shrugged.
"Another problem for us. We're working on it."
"How?"
"We think it'll prove far too complex for a jury. The details of MSUs, microwave sounding units, cross-track scanners with four-channel radiance analysis, and the questions about whether Channel 2 has been corrected for diurnal drifts and inter-satellite offsets, time-varying non-linear instrumental responses, we hope it will make them throw up their hands. Anyway, enough of all that."
She wiped her face with her napkin, and again he saw the white scar that ran down the underside of her arm.
"How'd you get that?" he said.
She shrugged.
"In law school."
"And I thought my school was tough."
"I taught an inner-city karate class," she said. "Sometimes it went late. You want any more of these chips?"
"No," he said.
"Shall we get the check?"
"Tell me,"
he said. "There's not a lot to tell. One night, I got in my car to drive home, and a kid jumped in the passenger seat and pulled a gun. Told me to start driving. Kid from your class? No, an older kid, late 20s. What did you do? I told him to get out. He told me to drive. So I started the car, and as I put it in gear, I asked him where he wanted me to go. And he was stupid enough to point, so I hit him in the windpipe. I didn't hit him hard enough, and he got off around, blew out the windshield. Then I hit him again with my elbow. Couple, three times. What happened to him? He said. He died. Jesus, Evans said. Some people make bad decisions, she said. What are you staring at me like that for? He was 6'2 and 210 and had a record from here to Nebraska. Armed robbery, assault with a deadly weapon, attempted rape, you name it. You think I should feel sorry for him? No, Evans said quickly. You do. I can see it in your eyes. A lot of people do. They go, he was just a kid. How could you do that? Let me tell you, people don't know what the hell they're talking about. One of us was going to get killed that night. I'm glad it wasn't me. But of course it still bothers me. I'll bet. Sometimes I wake up in a cold sweat, seeing the gunshot blow the windshield in front of my face, realizing how close I came to dying. I was stupid. I should have killed him the first time. Evans paused. He didn't know what to say. You ever had a gun at your head? She said. No. Then you have no idea how it feels, do you? Was there trouble about it? He said. You bet your ass there was trouble. For a while I thought I wasn't going to be able to practice law. They claimed I led him on. Do you believe that shit? I never saw the guy in my life. But then a very good attorney came to my rescue. Balder? She nodded. That's why I'm here. And what about your arm? Ah, hell, she said. The car crashed and I cut it on the broken glass. She signaled to the waitress. What do you say we get the check? I'll do that. Minutes later, they were back outside. Evans blinked in the milky midday light. They walked down the street. So, Evans said, I guess you're pretty good at karate. Good enough. They came to the warehouse. He shook her hand. I'd really like to have lunch again sometime, she said. She was so direct about it, he wondered whether it was personal or whether she wanted him to know how the lawsuit was going. Because, like Balder, much of what she had said was not encouraging. Lunch sounds great, he said. Not too long? Deal. Will you call me? Count on it, he said. Beverly Hills, Tuesday, August 24th, 5:04 p.m. It was almost dark when he went home to his apartment and parked in the garage facing the alley. He was going up the back stairs when the landlady poked her head out the window.
You just missed them, she said.
Who?
The cable repair people. They just left.
I didn't call any cable repair people, he said. Did you let them in?
Of course not. They said they would wait for you. They just left.
Evans had never heard of cable repair people waiting for anyone. How long did they wait?
Not long, maybe 10 minutes.
Okay. He got up to the second floor landing. A tag was hooked on his doorknob. Sorry we missed you. There was a checkbox to call again to reschedule service. Then he saw the problem. The address was listed at 2119 Roxbury. His address was 2129 Roxbury. But the address was on the front door, not the back door. They'd just made a mistake. He lifted his doormat to check on the key he kept there. It was right where he'd left it. It hadn't been moved. There was even a ring of dust around it. He unlocked the door and went inside. He went to the refrigerator and saw the old container of yogurt. He needed to get to the supermarket, but he was too tired. He checked the messages to see if Janice or Carol had called. They hadn't. Now, of course, there was the prospect of Jennifer Haynes, but she had a boyfriend. She lived in D.C., and he knew it would never work. He thought of calling Janice, but decided not to. He took a shower and was considering calling for pizza delivery. He lay down on the bed to relax for a minute before he called, and he fell immediately asleep. Century City, Wednesday, August 25th, 8:59 a.m. The meeting was held in the big conference room on the 14th floor. Morton's four accountants were there, his assistant, Sarah Jones, Herb Lowenstein, who did estate planning, a guy named Marty Bren, who did tax work for NERF, and Evans. Morton, who hated all financial meetings, paced restlessly. "Let's get to it," he said. "I am supposedly giving $10 million to NERF, and we have signed papers. Is that right?"
"Right," Lowenstein said.
"But now they want to attach a rider to the agreement?"
"Right," Marty Bren said. "It's pretty standard boilerplate for them." He shuffled through his papers. "Any charity wants to have full use of the money they receive, even when it is earmarked for a particular purpose. Maybe that purpose costs more or less than predicted, or it is delayed or mired in litigation or set aside for some other reason. In this case, the money has been earmarked for the Vanuatu lawsuit, and the relevant phrase NERF wants to add is, said monies to be used to defray the cost of the Vanuatu litigation, including fees, filing, and copying costs, blah, blah, or for other legal purposes, or for such other purposes as NERF shall see fit in its capacity as an environmental organization."
Morton said, "That's the phrase they want?"
"Boilerplate, as I said," Bren said.
"It's been in my previous donation agreements?"
"I don't recall offhand."
"Because," Morton said, "it sounds to me like they want to be able to pull the plug on this lawsuit and spend the money elsewhere."
"Oh, I doubt that," Herb said.
"Why?" Morton said. "Why else would they want this boilerplate? Look, we had a signed deal. Now they want a change. Why?"
"It's not really a change," Bren said.
"It sure as hell is, Marty."
"If you look at the original agreement," Bren said calmly, "it says that any money not spent on the lawsuit goes to NERF for other purposes."
"But that's only if there's money left after the lawsuit ends," Morton said. "They can't spend it on anything else until the suit is decided."
"I think they imagine there may be long delays here."
"Why should there be delays?" Morton turned to Evans. "Peter, what is going on over there in Culver City?"
"It looks like the suit is going forward," Evans said. "They have a large operation. There must be 40 people working on that one case. I don't think they plan to give it up."
"And are there problems with the suit?"
"There are certainly challenges," Evans said. "It's complicated litigation. They face strong opposing counsel. They're working hard."
"Why am I not convinced here?" Morton said. "6 months ago, Nick Drake told me this damn lawsuit was a slam dunk and a great publicity opportunity, and now they want a bailout clause."
"Maybe we should ask Nick."
"I got a better idea. Let's audit NERF."
Murmurs in the room.
"I don't think you have that right, George."
"Make it part of the agreement."
"I'm not sure you can do that."
"They want a rider. I want a rider. What's the difference?"
"I'm not sure you can audit their entire operation."
"George," Herb Lowenstein said, "you and Nick are friends of long standing. You're their concerned citizen of the year. Auditing them seems a little out of character for your relationship."
"You mean it looks like I don't trust them?"
"Put bluntly, yes."
"I don't."
Morton leaned on the table and looked at everyone sitting there.
You know what I think? They want to blow off the litigation and spend all the money on this conference on abrupt climate change that Nick is so excited about.
They don't need $10 million for a conference.
I don't know what they need. He already misplaced $250,000 of my money. It ended up in fucking Vancouver. I don't know what he is doing anymore.
Well, then you should withdraw your contribution.
Marty Brenn said. Not so fast. I think they've already made financial commitments based on the reasonable expectation that the money was coming.
Then give them some amount and forget the rest.
No, Morton said. I'm not going to withdraw the grant. Peter Evans here says the litigation is going forward, and I believe him. Nick says that the 250 grand was a mistake, and I believe him. I want you to ask for an audit, and I want to know what happens. I will be out of town for the next 3 weeks.
You will? Where?
I'm taking a trip.
But we'll have to be able to reach you, George.
I may be unreachable. Call Sarah, or have Peter here get in touch with me.
But George...
That's it, guys. Talk to Nick. See what he says. We'll be in contact soon.
And he walked out of the room, with Sarah hurrying after him. Lowenstein turned to the others.
What the hell was that all about?